I have entitled this sermon, The Sabbath, Remember to Keep It Holy. I want to start out by playing a video for Mr. Kylo. We produce a Ten Commandments series on Life, Hope, and Truth. And a couple of things that he says in this video I'm going to comment on throughout the video. So if we can, I would like to start with this video and then I'll come back. So at this time, let's hear Mr. Kylo talking about the Sabbath command.
The word holy gets tossed around a lot. Holy this, holy that. Mostly it's used to add color to already colorful expressions. But what does the word holy mean? How does something become holy? And how should it affect us? While there are several words in the original languages of the Bible that are translated holy in English, they all serve to mark something as sacred, hallowed, set apart. The next question to consider then is this: who does the setting apart and why? Take this basket of apples. If I take one and set it apart from the others, have I made this a holy apple? Is it sacred because of my actions? Even if I say, I hereby declare this apple holy, is it now holy? No, I can't make things holy, and neither can you. The only thing that could make this apple holy is if God took it, set it apart from all the other apples, and said, I have a special purpose for this apple. Then it would be a holy apple. With that in mind, let's look at the words of the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor, do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor the stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. The Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, is a holy day, sanctified and set apart by God for a purpose. The fourth commandment explains that this is to be a day different than the other six, a day when the usual activities of the work week are not only frowned upon, they are explicitly forbidden. Why? It's a gift. God set aside the Sabbath as a day for you and me to put aside the worries and cares and responsibilities of the week and strengthen our relationship with Him. It's a gift from a loving God who knows that trying to keep up in a 24/7 world will eventually burn out any human being. We need a day of rest, and so God commands us to take one on His Sabbath. Now, there are people who will tell you that the Sabbath is a burden, that it's restrictive and old-fashioned and doesn't make sense in a modern world. Really? Is it a burden to be kept from working ourselves to the point of exhaustion? Is it a burden to have 24 hours a week set aside to realign our focus with the important things in life? Is it a burden to be given time to reconnect with family and friends and, most important, with God? Or is it a blessing? Ask anyone who willingly and gladly obeys this commandment, and they will tell you what a blessing it is, if you keep it holy. So, how do you do that? Let me suggest where to start. Remember the apples? This apple can only be holy if God makes it holy. That part isn't up to us. What is in your power is how you treat the thing that God made holy. Because the Sabbath is a valuable gift from God, the God of this world and our foremost enemy, Satan the devil, wants nothing more than to convince you to ruin it. And the simplest way to ruin something holy is to treat it like something common. Take this apple and treat it like all the others. Take the Sabbath day and treat it like every other day of the week. Make it nothing special. Make it unholy. Now, the temptation can be strong. But remember, failing to keep the Sabbath holy hurts you. You lose the benefit of a day of rest. You lose the benefit of time with family and friends. And more than anything else, you lose the benefit of building a stronger relationship with your Creator. And you will gain nothing. To keep the Sabbath holy, defend your gift. The fourth commandment tells us to remember the Sabbath. Don't let it sneak up on you at the end of a long week. Prepare for it and then keep it holy. Refuse to let work and other activities encroach on the holy time you've been given by God. The Sabbath is a gift. Use it.
I wanted to start with that as a kind of a precursor to this, and I'll mention it a few times throughout the sermon. As a church, we have observed the Sabbath, and we do it from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. Everybody knows that. We believe that the Sabbath is still in effect today. We teach that the early Christian church kept the Sabbath. But within the community that keeps the Sabbath, and there are many, there are Jews, Messianic Jews, Seventh-day Adventists, Church of God, Seventh-day Church of God, all of us who keep the Sabbath, within that community, there still are different ideas of how the Sabbath should be kept. For the ultra-conservative Jews, the rules are lengthy and unbending. And I'm going to talk about some of those rules in just a moment. For anyone who has ever gone to Jerusalem and visited the Temple Mount on the Sabbath day, that is quite an experience. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. For a few, if you are not at your normal work, then everything else is okay. As long as you just have, you're not at work, but you can, you know, sit and watch sports on TV or whatever, there are people that believe that. For others, there is something in between. So what is it that God wants? I was at my brother's just recently, and he told me an interesting story. I just had to laugh at it. This was when he was first coming into the church and trying to figure out how he was going to keep the Sabbath, because he worked for a clothing store that was obviously their busy day was on Saturday. So he went to his boss thinking, well, this is going to be easy because my boss is Jewish. No. So he went to his boss and explained to his boss that he had figured out that he needed to keep the Sabbath, and as a Jew, he probably would recognize that. And his manager said, well, Dick, my brother's name's Dick, he said, God knows we have to make money. And he ended up getting fired from his job because of it, with a Jew as a boss. So we all have different ideas. So what can the Old Testament tell us about how to keep the Sabbath? How can some of the examples of Christ and the early disciples help us to understand how to keep the Sabbath? You saw it on the slide that Mr. Kylo did, so I won't turn to it, but in Exodus 20 and verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. You actually could reword that and say, remember to keep the Sabbath holy. Well, how do you keep it holy? How do we do that? I want to talk about that. This is actually going to be a two-part sermon. It's part one today. I was trying to fit it all into one, but it ended up being a Gerald Waterhouse sermon, and I didn't want to do that to anyone, especially since we have a luau tonight. So we'll do this in two parts. Today, I want to cover the basic command from God. I want to look at and define some of the words that the Old Testament uses to talk about the Sabbath day. And then I want to turn to the New Testament and see the difference between how Christ kept the Sabbath and the Pharisees kept the Sabbath. They're two radically different ideas of how we're supposed to keep the Sabbath. And then we'll be able to go into next Sabbath, go into several principles that are given from the Scripture, and that we can take those principles and then apply it as to how to keep the Sabbath. And by the way, I forgot to mention this, but services next Sabbath are at 3 p.m. Because I'm going to be running the circuit. So next Sabbath, 3 p.m. I want to go back and spend a little bit of time in Genesis chapter 2. This is the first introduction that we have to the Sabbath. And I want to spend some time here and talk about some of the words that are used in Genesis chapter 2, because it gives us some hints as to what God meant when he set this day aside. Genesis chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. On the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Verse 3, and God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. So there's a lot of information in here. Let's just kind of parse this verse out a little bit. It says that when he decided to set apart or set aside a day, it was the seventh day. So he worked for six and rested on the seventh. It said that he rested from his work. We'll talk about those two words, rest and work. It says that on that day that he rested, it says that he blessed it, and it also says that he sanctified it. What are the differences between blessed and sanctified? And then he said that he did it all to point back to creation. Now, we'll see more in the second part, but there's more to the Sabbath than just you need to take a break. There are implications for rest, but there also are implications for the future, as we will talk about when we get to the second part. But I, again, want to take a closer look at some of these words because I think it will help us to have a better idea of what it is that God was telling us. So let's go back at verse 2 and read this again. It says, on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested. So let's look at that first word, rested. The Hebrew word for rested is shavat. If you want to spell it in English, it's S-A-B-A-T, shavat, shavat. And it is a verb form for the same word as the Sabbath. So in essence, what he's saying here as he looks at this is that God Sabbathed on the seventh day. The word Sabbath, the noun, means a rest. The verb form, shavat, means to rest. So in other words, what he's saying here is he Sabbathed on that seventh day. He rested. It's part and parcel, that's what that word means. God rested on that day. But it also can mean to cease from exertion, to put away, or to put down. I'll have some examples of that in just a moment on how else you can think about how this word is used. I want to look at four different verses in the Old Testament that uses this word shavat, because it'll give you a much clearer picture of what it is that God is talking about here. Let's start with Isaiah chapter 33. Isaiah chapter 33, and in verse 8. And we'll play a little game here. As I go through these four and I read the verse, I want you to tell me what word in the verse is shavat. Right? What word do you think is shavat? Verse 8 of Isaiah 33. And I better get my glasses on because I just went to the wrong scripture. Hang on a second. Chapter 33 and verse 8. The highways lie waste, the traveling man ceases, he has broken the covenant, he has despised the cities, and he regards no man. What word in there is the word shavat? He ceased. The traveling man ceased. Gives you an idea of what it is that God's talking about when he uses the word shavat. You cease, you stop doing something. You put something down. So the traveling man ceased. You know, for a lot of Jews today, they take that very seriously. I'm going to read about that a little later on in the sermon. They even have how far you can travel on the Sabbath. And you go one step further than what they say you can travel. You know, you're not breaking the Sabbath up to a certain point, but you are if you go past it. We'll talk about that when we get to the New Testament on the difference between how Christ and the Pharisees saw the Sabbath. Let's go to Genesis chapter 8. Genesis 8. Verses 21 and 22. See if you can tell me what word is shavat here. Genesis 8 and verse 21. And the Eternal smelled a smoothing aroma. And then the Eternal said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy everything as I have done. It's talking about the fact that he had just destroyed the earth in a flood. He wouldn't do that again. Verse 22. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night will not cease. So what word in there again? Cease. In other words, he's almost using it in the opposite way. He's saying, I will make sure that there will always be a winter and a summer. There's always going to be rain. There's always going to be springtime. There's always going to be night and day. That will not cease, right? That will not rest. God is saying this earth is going to keep producing, and it won't rest. I won't allow it. That's kind of the opposite of how to use this. It won't rest. Let's go to Jeremiah 48. I'll give two more, and then we'll start to summarize some of this. Jeremiah chapter 48. In verse 33. Jeremiah 48, verse 33. Joy and gladness are taken from the plentiful field and from the land of Moab, but I have caused the wine to fail from the wine presses, and no one will tread with joyous shouting. Not joyous shouting. What word in there is shaveth? It's the word fail. I will cause the wine to fail. It'll cease. It'll stop. I have caused the wine to fail. This word shaveth means that it will stop from exertion. Plants aren't going to exert anymore because the grapes aren't going to grow. And if the grapes don't grow, there's nothing to take to the wine press. So in essence, it's saying that the wine sabbathed from the wine presses. Stopped producing. Stopped. It just stopped. It's not there anymore. And one final one. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus 23, this is the section that talks about the Sabbath and the holy days themselves. This is the command for the Day of Atonement. See if you can tell me, and I will warn you in advance, this is a trick question, which word here is shaveth? Verse 32, it will be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you will afflict your souls. On the ninth day of the month at evening, from even to even, you will celebrate your Sabbath. Now, because I said it's a trick, no one's going to... Yeah, Tommy's heard this before. It's the word celebrate. When you think of the Sabbath, when you think of resting, do you think of celebrating? You will celebrate your Sabbath. In essence, he's saying you will shaveth your Sabbath. You'll rest on your rest. And that is a happy thing. That is a good thing. You will celebrate your Sabbath, meaning you will stop working yourself to the bone. Right? That's what it means. It's actually a very good thing. I want you to think about this from the perspective of, and we'll talk about this a little bit when it talks about work. When it says that this word shaveth can also mean to put away or to put down, it's almost like God is saying, you've got your hammer in your hand, and I'm telling you, put it down. You've got whatever it is, the thing that you do that's keeping you from being with family, put it down. Just stop. Just rest. Celebrate. Be excited about it. That's what that word shaveth means. Let's look at the next part of Genesis 2 in verse 2. It says, God rested from his work. Well, what work are we talking about? The word, the Hebrew word malaka, M-E-L-A-K-A, malaka. The word means a deputyship, to serve another, to be in employment, to be at work, to be in a business, to have an occupation or an industry. The word work is one of those words that is used to signal something that you do to make money, something that you do for a livelihood, something that you do to keep yourself going. But let's look at a couple of other instances of how this word is used. 2 Chronicles chapter 13. 2 Chronicles chapter 13 in verse 10. And we'll get a much broader picture of what it is that God is telling us that we are to rest from. When it says we rest from our work, what does that mean? 2 Chronicles 13 in verse 10. But as for us, the Eternal is our God, and we have not forsaken him. And the priests who minister to the Eternal are the sons of Aaron, and the Levites attend to their duties. The word duties there is malaka. What are your duties? All right, so let's say that you're not at work, but do you still have duties to do? What are those duties? We're gonna start to define this as we go further on. It isn't perhaps just the occupation that you do, but some of the duties that you have. I can think of duties that I have that are separate from work. I have to mow the lawn once a week. And in the middle of the summer, sometimes twice a week. That's a duty that I have. That's something that I set aside. What are the duties that you have to do that are your regular routine business? Psalm 107, verse 23. Psalm 107, verse 23. This is perhaps how we would normally want to use this work, or this the meaning of the word work. Psalm 107, verse 23. The psalmist talks about ships and those who are on ships. It says, those who go down to the sea in ships and who do business on great waters. Their business was shipping. What is your business? Some of you work in HR. Some of you work in telecommunications or work for some company that repairs engines or does something like that. What is your business? The business for these workers was shipping. So during the time of the Sabbath, they were to set aside their normal business. How do you do that? Let's go to one more because I like this one. It actually uses both words. Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 11. Nehemiah 4, verse 11. This is when Ezra and Nehemiah went back to Jerusalem to try and fix the walls around Jerusalem. But Sanballat and others of the Samaritans were trying to stop them. So here's what Nehemiah says. Chapter 4, verse 11. Then our adversaries said, they will neither know nor see anything till we come into their midst and kill them and cause the work to cease, the melaka to shaveth. Right? There's even a bad way to cause work to cease, and that's to surround the workers with an army and say, you can't work anymore. This word melaka simply means the thing that you're doing as a part of your regular business, a part of what these men were doing. They may have been farmers, they may have been tradesmen, but the work that they were doing at that time was to build the wall back around Jerusalem. But they were supposed to stop when it came to the Sabbath, even though that may not have been their regular industry. But does this word only apply to your business? Or does it also mean that you need to stop playing? You need to stop having fun. You need to stop watching television. You need to stop fishing. What does it mean? I'll tell a little story here. I did this when I was in Laurel last week. My mother was the one that came into the church, my grandmother and my mother, and she came from a very strict background. What she grew up with was card playing, drinking, dancing. Those were sins. Basically, anything that caused you to smile was a sin. And she lived a very stoic, esoteric life. And that, to her, was comfortable because that's what she thought was right. If you're having fun, then it's the devil's playground. And she was... So when she came into the church, she brought that with her. When we would go to Sabbath services, we would have a two-hour service, and then we would go home. And we would sit down, and for 2.5 or 3 hours, we would go through our notes again. And as a 9 or 10-year-old, I had to listen to it twice. And then, after she was done, the only thing that I was allowed to do was sit on the couch. Because I couldn't do anything, because I couldn't have fun. That wasn't a part of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was not to have fun. The Sabbath was a commanded day of disciplined rest. And so I couldn't do anything. And as a very young kid, I can remember thinking, when's sunset, right? That was what was important to me at the time. That's it. But from my mom's perspective, just like many Jews today that have very strict regard to the Sabbath, that was what it was like. And again, I'm going to talk about what some of the Jewish people think about today and even back in Christ's time. Let's go a little further again. In Genesis chapter 2, you don't have to turn back there again, but it says that when he ceased from his work, it says that he blessed it and he sanctified it. The word blessed, Hebrew word is barak, B-A-R-A-K, barak. The word blessed means an act of adoration, of praise, of congratulation, or even to kneel before. Let's go to Psalm 95 and verse 6 and see how this word is used. Psalm chapter 95, in verse 6. Psalm 95, verse 6. O come and let us worship and bow down and let us kneel before the Eternal, our Maker. That word kneel is Barak. So on the Sabbath day, we are to kneel before God. We are to adore the Sabbath day. We are to, in essence, congratulate God for this amazing gift that he's given us. There is even one place in the Old Testament, I won't turn there, but you remember when, and I never can remember the guy's name, but it was Abraham's servant that was supposed to go and get Rebekah and bring him back to Isaac. And it says that when they got to the well, he said he caused his camels to kneel. That's the word Barak, to kneel. They were resting. They were, you know, after a hard day's rest and you sat down, you know, if you've ever exercised and at the end of the exercise you get a cold glass of water and you sit and your body goes, oh, that's what this means. It's a blessing. After working hard, it is a blessing to stop. That's what it means. He blessed it. He was excited about the fact that he was giving you a gift. I am so excited about this. They're going to be working hard, and then I'm going to give them a blessing. They're going to be able to sit down and go, ah, oh, rest. Now, as a kid, I didn't see that, right? To me, it was somewhat of a burden, and you heard him say that. As an adult, I don't see that as a burden. I slept in till 9 o'clock this morning. It was wonderful. Now, obviously, I don't get to do that on the days when we're going up to Laurel. But that's, to me, I see what he's saying here. This is a time of adoration, a time of praise, a time to be able to reconnect with family and friends and with God, to kneel before God and adore him for giving us the gift of not having to work. And then finally, the word sanctified. It says he blessed the Sabbath, but he also sanctified it. Q-A-D-A-S, kadas. It means to pronounce clean, to consecrate, to dedicate, to hallow, to purify, to set aside. As Mr. Kylo talked about, the opposite of that is to make it common. So in other words, like he showed that basket of apples. All of the apples are the same except this one, if God puts it aside and says this is different. So you've got 6 days that are our common work days. That's what we do. We work. But there's one in which God said, there's one that is different from the rest. I am going to make this. I am going to kadas this day. I'm going to set it apart. And it's going to be different than all of the rest of them. So if you put those four words together, the words for rest, work, blessed, and sanctified, you get an idea of what God was telling us. We cease from our regular work in order to kneel before and adore and praise God, who set this one day separate from all the other six. So how do we do that? Again, we go right back to how do we do that. Let's go a little further on in time. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. This is the Ten Commandments from Deuteronomy. And this is the Sabbath command. This is after Israel has come out of Egypt. Now, I want you to remember for a moment what this would have meant to them. You have no concept of what the Israelites felt because you weren't slaves. But they had just come out of 400 some odd years where they couldn't take a day off, right? Can you imagine going up to Pharaoh or to your boss and saying, it's almost sunset Friday, I got to stop. Right, yeah, that's not good. They had 400 years of not keeping the Sabbath. God was reintroducing it back to them. So what he is saying to them would have made difference. When he said to them, remember the Sabbath day, that wouldn't have been this burdensome thing. That would have been, oh, yeah, that's right. I don't have to go serve anybody today. I can stop. That would have been a blessing to them. Verse 12, notice what it says. He says, observe the Sabbath day. In Exodus 20, it said, remember. This is a different word. Observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy as the Eternal your God commanded you. That word observe here means to put a hedge around or to protect it. Protect the Sabbath day. Don't let anything encroach on it. As Mr. Kylo was mentioning, the Sabbath isn't something that should all of a sudden you realize, oh man, the sunset 20 minutes ago. I wasn't paying attention. This is something we need to protect it. We need to put a hedge around it. Otherwise, it can be very easy for us to get drawn back in to the same thing that he had, that we would have been doing before. No work was to be done through this. Let's go on and read a little bit further. 6 days will you labor and do all your work, But the seventh day is the Sabbath, is the rest of the eternal your God. You will do no malacha, you will do no work. But then it goes on and it further defines it. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor the stranger that is within your gates. Nobody within your purview is to be working on that day. Right? So in one sense, you could say, think about how people would kind of think around this, right? Well, God told me to rest, but I still want all my work done, so I'll just have my employees do it. I'm resting, but nobody else can. Now, look what God said toward the end of verse 14. Why would you do this? So that your male servant and your female servant can rest as well as you do. Even the stranger within your gates. Don't hire a contractor to come in on that day. Let him have a break too. Let him rest. No work was to be done on that day. Even the animals got to rest. Can you imagine that? Right? Even God said, even let your animals rest. Now, again, think about this. That you can take, and let's say you take a donkey or whatever, and you tie it to this grist mill that walks around in a circle. Have you ever seen those where you can pour grain into it, and then this donkey or horse will just keep, and they'll go. Put a carrot with a stick out there, and they'll follow that thing all day long. So you set that up before the Sabbath starts, and you load it with grain, and then your donkey will keep doing, so it's like your donkey's doing your work for you, but you're not doing anything. Now, God said, even your donkey's even got to rest. For those of you that have never seen this, go to Jerusalem one of these days on the Sabbath day. They have very interesting things there. The hotel that I was at, and others of you that have gone there have experienced this, they have what they call a Sabbath elevator. I don't know if I've ever talked about that here or not, but they have all this bank of elevators, and then on the Sabbath day, they typically shut all of them down but one. And the idea is, it says in the Bible that you're not supposed to light a fire on the Sabbath. Well, they've taken that to mean electricity. You know, so if you turn a light switch on, that generates a spark, and that's working on the Sabbath, so you can't turn a light on. So what they do is they set that elevator up so that it goes to every floor. And I was on like the 30th floor of a 30-floor hotel. And I get on the elevator to go downstairs, and it goes to the 29th floor. It opens. There's no buttons. All the buttons are disabled. Opens for 30 seconds, closes, goes down to floor 28. Opens for 30 seconds, closes, goes down to 27. Opens for 30. It took me, I was so irritated by the time I got down to the lobby that I was not keeping the Sabbath anymore. They have signs on the hair dryers, not for use on Shabbat. So it's not like they're going to know whether you did or not. There's a sign there that says don't use the hair, because if you turn that on. There are some people that even, and Tommy was even talking about this, he's got a stove. Some people would turn their stoves on, one burner on, before the Sabbath started so that they wouldn't light a fire, but they'd have it available to heat their food up. They've got a stove, I think, that has a little side thing that says that it's a Sabbath, what's it called? Sabbath burner. It's labeled as a Sabbath burner, and that's what that's for. It just keeps things warm. It's not like it's, you know, spewing out a bunch of gas, but it's just something to keep warm. Is that what God intended? That they may rest as well as you. Look at verse 15. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. That'd be pretty hard to forget, but you have you kind of get a feeling after a generation or so that the new kids coming down the pike had forgotten about that. You were a slave in the land of Egypt. The Eternal your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Eternal your God commanded you to rest. It's because he's putting it back to slavery. You were slaves and couldn't rest. Now I am not only giving you a chance to rest, I am commanding you that you have to rest. How was ancient Israel's treatment of the Sabbath? I could go through thousands of examples. I'll just give you one. Go to Jeremiah chapter 17. Jeremiah 17 and in verse 21. Humans seem to be creatures of extremes. We go to an extreme one way or the other. And Jeremiah 17 kind of talks about what Israel was like when it regards to the Sabbath day. Jeremiah 17, verse 21. Thus says the Eternal, take heed to yourselves and bear no burden on the Sabbath day. Now, why would he say that? again, think about how people, well, okay, so I'm not at work, but I'm going to get set up for work the next day. So I'm going to take, you know, I'm going to take all my stuff and I'm going to lug it over to my store. And I'm, you know, the store's closed, but I'm in there and I'm setting stuff up. No, he says, don't even do that. Don't even bear a burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates to Jerusalem, where your place of work would be. Verse 22, nor carry a burden out of your houses on the Sabbath day, nor do any work, but hallow this rest day as I commanded your fathers. But verse 23, they didn't obey or incline their ear. They made their necks stiff that they might not receive instructions. You've seen that before with people, that, especially, I always pick on kids. I'm sorry. I was one once and I did the same thing, but I can remember mom would tell me to do something. I just would get stiff. You know, that stiffness, that's a perfect example of what people are like. And they were like that with God too. Verse 27, if you won't heed me to hallow my Sabbath, such as not carrying a burden or entering the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, then I will kindle a fire in the gates and I will devour the palaces and it won't be quenched. In other words, he's saying, if you're not going to keep it, I'm going to take it away from you. And you'll go right back to working all 7 days a week again. Sad. Now I want to go to the New Testament and look at some things. Matthew chapter 12, and I want to talk about the difference between the way Christ kept the Sabbath and the way the Pharisees kept the Sabbath, because it was very different. What precipitated this argument? Matthew chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, your disciples are doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath. All right, go back in the Old Testament somewhere and find where you can't walk through a grain field and pick a grain. In other words, there were rules that were in place at this time, and Christ just wasn't following the Pharisees' rules. Imagine that. Notice one of the first things that pops out to me, again, from my background of having to sit on the sofa during the Sabbath and I couldn't do anything else. They weren't sitting on the sofa. They were out walking around. Now, maybe they were going someplace. Maybe they were going to the synagogue. Doesn't say what they were doing. But something happened here, and the Pharisees thought that they were breaking the Sabbath. Verse 3. But he said to them, have you not read what David did when he was hungry? He and those that were with him, he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. Not only was he eating the showbread, which he wasn't supposed to do, he was inside the center of the temple, which he was not supposed to be. He wasn't a Levite. He wasn't supposed to be in there, but he did it anyway. Verse 5, or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath day, the priests in the temple profane the rest, the Sabbath, and are blameless? What do you mean by that? Well, the priests had a job to do, and on the Sabbath day, they still did their work. They did it Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. They still did it. They never stopped. The priests never stopped. Think about the job that I have to do. My busiest work day is the Sabbath. That's my busiest day of the week, right? So he's saying here, the priests can profane the Sabbath, of which, by the way, some of them were. So he's talking about, you know, your own people work on the Sabbath, and yet you're getting on me because I'm walking through a cornfield or a grain field. Verse 6, yet I say unto you that in this place there is one greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. They didn't realize it at the time. They will come to see it one of these days. He was the one in Genesis chapter 2 that set the day aside. I'm the one who, in essence, what he's saying is, I created the Sabbath. Don't you tell me what I'm supposed to do on it. I made it. Imagine in the second resurrection when they come up and realize who they were talking to. I always laugh at that. He owns this holy time. I want to comment on something. There was a sermon that Britt Taylor gave once. If you can find it out there online, I don't know if you can. It's an amazing sermon, and it's called Borders, Boundaries, and Barriers. And he talked about the way the Pharisees saw the Sabbath, and he used an example. It was a great analogy. He said, imagine that the law says, don't fall off the cliff. Don't fall off the cliff. That's a great commandment, right? You tell your kids, don't run out into the street. That's a command that you give your kids, right? A commandment. What if God's commandment says, don't fall off the cliff? You walk up to it, you look over the ledge, it's beautiful. Have you ever done that? Gone to Grand Canyon and you're kind of standing up at the edge and you look up, it's just monumental. But the command says, don't fall off the cliff. Good command. Well, to the Pharisees, since God said, don't fall off the cliff, we'll put a sign up. And the sign says, don't fall off the cliff. That's a great sign. There's no command that says you had to put a sign up, but let's do that. Then someone else comes and says, well, let's put 6 feet in front of that sign a fence with another sign that says, don't climb over the fence. Now there's no possible way you're going to get to fall off the cliff because you not only have a sign that says, don't fall off the cliff. Now you got a fence with a sign saying, don't climb over the fence. Well, that's not good enough because still somebody might do it. So let's put a road out in front of that fence and let's patrol it with guards saying, don't you go over that fence. That's the way in the Jewish mind they set up the Sabbath. It isn't that they were trying to, well, in a way it's almost like they're trying to outdo God, but to make sure that we don't break the Sabbath, let's put all of these barriers up so that we can't possibly break the Sabbath by making it so absolutely restrictive. Right? And in one sense, that's kind of the way my mom did the Sabbath. If little Philly sits down on the sofa and doesn't move, he's not going to break the Sabbath. And that was the way the Pharisees saw it. Jesus Christ came and saw it very differently. Now, here's what I want to do. I want to read this. This is from Gill's exposition of the Bible, talking about the Jewish canon that was in at the time and how the Pharisees saw things. This is in regards to this very verse right here. Your disciples are doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath, verse 2 of Matthew 12. This is what they comment on that. The Pharisees mention this with astonishment and indignation. What they refer to is not their walking on the Sabbath. They knew they could do this according to their canons, provided they didn't exceed 2,000 cubits, about 1,000 yards. You could walk 1,000 yards and be okay, but if you walked 1,001, then you were breaking the Sabbath. So they knew that Christ wasn't overdoing that, so they couldn't get to him because of that. Nor was it their passing through the cornfields, because it also says in the Old Testament that you leave the corners of your field so that strangers walk by can glean it. That wasn't the problem. The problem was they were doing it on the Sabbath. According to them, according to Pharisaic law, it was not lawful for a man to even visit his gardens or his fields on the Sabbath day, lest when he got there, he started thinking about, well, here's what I need to do tomorrow, etc. So if you had a grain field, you couldn't even walk out in your own grain field on the Sabbath because there might be this temptation to start planning your work week for the next week. So for the Pharisees, you weren't even allowed to walk in your own cornfield. Strangers could walk in your cornfield, but you couldn't. That was how restrictive it was. But this they knew was not the case. Christ and the disciples were not the proprietors of the field. They were merely plucking ears of corn. What bothered them was that they were doing it on the Sabbath, and they interpreted that as servile work or as reaping, though in the law just mentioned, it was manifestly distinguished from it. Their rule was, he who reaps even a little bit on the Sabbath day is guilty of death. Plucking the ears of corn is a derivation of reaping. Therefore, it was punishable by the same kind of death if done presumptuously. So Philo and the Jew observes that the rest of the Sabbath not only reached to his own men, it reached to bond and free, to beasts, even to trees and plants, so that it was not lawful to even cut a plant or a branch or as much as pick a leaf on the Sabbath day, because the trees had to rest on the Sabbath. Now, there's, if you've got an apple tree or a pear tree, you're not supposed to go out and harvest your crop. But certainly there's nothing wrong with going out on the Sabbath day and plucking an apple off the tree and eating it. And what made this more heinous was that they plucked the ears of grain and ate them, and so broke their fast before morning prayer. For according to the Pharisee, a man may not eat anything on the Sabbath day until morning prayers were done. Show me that in the Old Testament. That's just not there. These are rules that were made up to make sure that they wouldn't defile or to break the Sabbath. They weren't to eat bread until the daily sacrifice and the prayers were offered, which was around 9 or 10 o'clock. So to the Pharisees, they couldn't eat until at least 10 a.m. because they had to get through morning prayers first. That gives you a sense of why the Pharisees were so upset. And it also helps us to understand Christ's response. I want to turn to Mark chapter 2. This is a parallel account of what we just read, but something else that Christ said is mentioned here that wasn't in Matthew's account. Mark 2 and verse 27. And he said to them, this is after talking to the Pharisees about what David did with the showbread, etc. He says, the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath. Let's look at some other translations. Good News Translation. The Sabbath was made for the good of humans. Humans weren't made for the Sabbath. Read a few more here. New Century Version. The Sabbath day was made to help people. What help were they were to be given a day off? They were to be given a day of rest. The Sabbath was made to help people. People were not made to be ruled by the Sabbath day. New Living Translation, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people. What needs did they have? They needed to rest. And not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. International Children's Bible, last one here. The Sabbath day was made to help people. They were not made to be ruled by that day. The sense of verse 27 is the Sabbath was created to be a blessing for those who keep it. Again, we talked about this, the Sabbath elevators. If you go to the Temple Mount on the Sabbath day, it's very interesting. They will, according to what you can read in the Old Testament, where on the Sabbath day you're supposed to have this almost party-like atmosphere where you're singing psalms and you play on the lute and tambourines and all that. So they'll do that. They'll drag their instruments to the Temple Mount and they'll get together and it's like this festivity where they're singing and they're dancing and they're playing instruments and it's all songs of praise to God, which is great. But I was there and I was seeing this and I thought, how cool is this? And I pulled my camera out and snapped a picture and it all came to a stop. And they started yelling at me in Hebrew. And one of them recognized that I was American. He came up and he says, no photos on Shabbat. I said, why? So I said, that's work. And I'm like, you're dancing. Right? You're exerting. What gifts here? But I was not allowed to take a picture on the Sabbath. That's these rules and these regulations that are there. Humans are extremists. They either want thousands and thousands of rules, or they want absolutely none. But the truth is, the Sabbath isn't either. The Sabbath isn't about rules and regulations. The Sabbath is rest. It is a day of rest from work. Mr. Kylo said in the video that it was a gift from God. How do you treat a gift? If your boss were to come up to you and say, Tommy, you're looking stressed. I want you to take the next 2 days off. Does he mean, oh, and by the way, take your laptop with you because I might have some? No. Well, some bosses do. But the idea is if your boss says, you've been working too hard, I want you to take some time off. That's what he means. Your boss who created you said, I want you to take some time off. This isn't the regular routine. You're stressed. You've had 6 days of work. I want you to have one off. Now, what we're going to do next week, and this is pretty much the end of the sermon for today. I know it kind of ends abrupt, but what I want to do next week is I want to talk about some of the principles that the Bible uses or tells us about the Sabbath day, and then I want to use those principles to try and figure out how we treat it today. There's nothing in the Bible does not say, don't mow your lawn on the Sabbath. They didn't have lawnmowers back then. They had goats. It doesn't say don't watch college sports. They didn't have it back then. I don't even know if they had colleges. Well, I guess they did. But what does it mean? How do we fit the principles of the Bible to 2018? So I want to go through some of those just to get an idea. The Bible is short on details. It's good on doctrine, but sometimes short on details, especially after a couple thousand years have changed and now we've got automobiles, et cetera. I remember Joe Biden, when he was considering running for president, was it Joe Biden? I may have the wrong name now. But anyway, he was Jewish, and they asked him, he said, what will you do if something happens on the Sabbath day? And he said, I would still come in if it were an ox in the ditch, but I wouldn't ride in a car. If I were somewhere else, I wouldn't ride in a car. I would have to walk because I can't start the car. Because, you know, and he had all these rules and regulations about what he would do on the Sabbath day. Is that what it's about? What I want to do is go through some of these principles next week, principles on which we can build sound practices. There are several scriptures that can guide us into good Sabbath observance, and next time we will explore those. And we'll take those principles and extrapolate how we can learn to keep the Sabbath holy. So next Sabbath, again at 3 p.m., what I'll do is I'll go through five or six different principles that the Bible tells us, and then from those we can get an idea of proper Sabbath worship.